Hi, my name is Dave Cooper, and I want to welcome you to another Alternative to Rehab podcast. Now, in this short series on methods, I want today to introduce you to one of the most important methods that I use. Now, I call this the family car. Because of its importance in this whole approach, and frankly, how much is involved in it, I will probably clip this into two or three separate sections, attention span being what it is these days. So here is section one, which will be mainly about the way our thinking needs to shift in order to make the best use of this method. And now this means looking at what I call the medical model. So what is the medical model? Well, we need to know what it is and how it developed in order to make choices about it. But we also need to know really how much it influences the way we see ourselves and think and talk about ourselves in our culture. Now, Freud was not the first, but possibly the most famous person to consider the idea that we are more than one thing. He posited three parts of us, and he called them the id, the ego, and the superego. However, he also said that anything other than these three are introjects and need to be got rid of. Other approaches have also used the idea of multiplicity, including psychosynthesis, transactional analysis, and more recently, internal family systems. But ask yourself, which have been the two largest institutions over the last few centuries that have influenced us? We'd have to say these would be the church and science, or religion and science. One of these has demonized your parts and the other has pathologized them. Either way, we're in a similar position. We've got something that we need to get rid of. I want you to move away from this view. I want you to work with yourself and not against yourself. And I can't tell you how much these traditional thinking from the church and from science have influenced the way that you see yourself. So I would say our thinking has been largely shaped by the medical model and, if you like, the religious model. Now, this model comes from psychiatric thinking, which is based on medical thinking, which is based on science. Nothing wrong with that, you may say, but the way it constructs us is very powerful. It says that we are ill, or that we have a condition, or at least there is something wrong with us and we need to be fixed. We need to change. Now, this leads to this very problematic question of changing yourself. Not to mention the whole, you know, self-help industry, which this view supports, with sales of millions of books every year that encourage you to change and tell you that you need to change. Now, this self that needs to be fixed idea is the thing that leads us to think of ourselves as crazy or inconsistent and makes us fight with ourselves when we say one thing and then do another. Neuroscience is now showing us that the nature of the self is much more multifaceted and complex. And by the way, it's not an illness. I always say to my clients, this is not a mental condition, it's the human condition. Now, this family car method takes into account our multifaceted nature, but before we can use it effectively in our recovery, we must first take a look at the relationship between the brain and the mind. And this will help us make better sense of what we call our parts. Now, the neuroscience here, I explain to my clients like this. I always say, your mind runs your life on license from your brain. Your mind is running your life, but on license from your brain. You know, you decided what to wear this morning. You decided what to have for breakfast. You even decide where you work, who to marry, and so on. Your brain is not interested, but your brain will take over at any time it sees a good enough reason to do so. And basically, this is whenever it's threatened. Now look, there's a very good reason for this, and it's all to do with your security. Whenever I start to work with someone, I point out to them that they already know about this multifaceted self. We know about this as a culture. We know about this in our experience. Have you ever said to yourself, oh, you know, I'm in two minds about that? Or, oh, I just wasn't myself the other day. Or what about, I just saw red and I couldn't control myself? Did you ever give yourself a good talking to? The truth is that we all know about this, but the medical model has us all thinking that this is a mental condition. So we all hide most of this or just deny the idea. Your imagination works autonomously from you. This is why you often have thoughts you didn't decide to have. So the concept of the imagination is the second way that we all understand how complex we are as human beings. The method we're going to look at today makes sense of this complexity and gives us a coherent way of working with it. This method will help you to work with yourself instead of against yourself. So let me ask you a question at this point. Have you ever walked along behind someone on a path, maybe with some bushes? And when a leafy branch flicks back at you from them, what happens next is truly amazing. In a fraction of a second, your brain has seen the danger, shut you down, lowered your head, raised your arm, and closed your eyes. And your mind still didn't know what was happening. This is how much faster your brain is, and a really good example of how your brain takes over at the right moment. We've all had this experience, but just think for a moment, who was raising your hand? Who was lowering your head? Who was closing your eyes? And which part of you is it that sees the danger so much faster than your mind does? This is your brain. Now, these parts are all natural. There's nothing unnatural about them. So the point is that your brain is not only much quicker than your mind, it's much better suited to helping you survive. Why is this? Well, to understand this reason, we must take a closer look at the human brain itself. Now, our brains are in three basic sections. First, we have the basic or reptilian brain, sometimes called a prehistoric brain. Now, this is part of the brain we share with most other living creatures. Basically, anything with a backbone has got one of these things at the top of it. The second part, or limbic system, as it's known, is more advanced and is what we call the emotional center of the brain. And we share this with several of the more intelligent animals. The outer third section is known as the neocortex and contains all the higher functions. Now, we don't share this part with anybody. This is what makes you human. This is where the mind is active and contains things like your appetite, morals, beliefs, ethical understanding, as well as your ability to contemplate, meditate, and reflect. The problem is that these qualities are really not much use when you're in a burning building and need to escape. This is the main reason our brain shuts down the mind and takes over when enough threat is perceived. So, how do these parts become recruited to, shall we say, more unnatural jobs? Well, all well and good so far. We have this amazing brain and it takes over when it's appropriate and it protects us. What's wrong with that? Well, nothing so far. The problem comes when life teaches us that some things are a threat when in reality they aren't. Now, if something happens to you that's traumatizing or threatening to your pride or your ego or your survival, the brain can store this and keep an eye out for it in the same way it looks for life-threatening circumstances. So we're mainly concerned with threat. I want you to remember that. And the way we've been designed to deal with it and how this can go wrong. So having said all that, let's now take a look at the method. I want you to work with your brain and not against it. You see, when we experience any trauma, our brain takes a sort of snapshot of that circumstance, and instead of passing this idea back into memory, it really just keeps hold of it. Now, storing these events in a part of the brain known as the amygdala is the third option, instead of just getting rid of this information or letting it become part of the memory. The brain then acts like that guy at the passport control in the airport. I'm sure you've seen this, you've been through it, when they're looking for a face that matches any face they have on their screen. That's what they're doing, that's their job. Like the passport official, whenever your brain spots something reminiscent of traumatic circumstances, it raises the alarm, and this is when your parts are triggered. This is when you are shut down. We experience a similar set of feelings that we did originally when this thing first happened, and we often have a strong sense of what to do. Let me give you the three things to remember about the way your parts think and behave. Number one, they're constructed in trauma. They are constructed, they start their life when something difficult happens. Number two, they are triggered by threat. When that circumstance looks as if it's about to arise again, you will be triggered and the brain will take over. Number three, they're always trying to help. Now, this is such an important one because these activities have they've ruined your life. They've got in the way. They harm you. So I understand why you think that this is a bad thing and needs to be got rid of. This is heading back to the medical model, whether you've got some kind of a demon or you've got some kind of a mental illness. But I want to tell you something really important. Your brain is always trying to help you. It is not trying to trip you up. It is not trying to harm you. It simply wants to help you get away from the threat. So, let's give you an example now. Imagine something happening at the age of 7. Your brain remembers it, and then later in life is often triggered by what it believes to be similar circumstances. Now, at these times, we often get a strong sense of what to do, some certainty, but we need to remember this advice is coming from a 7-year-old. So now, let me say something about what to expect from our parts. Their thinking, the part's thinking, is always, number one, immediate. Their thinking is always about now. And the younger the part, the more immediate the thinking. There'll never be any thought from the part about what's best for your future. Even next week will be too far away. It's always thinking about the quick fix, how to get you out of it. So number one, immediate. Number two, radical. Your parts always think in radical ways. They really, everything that they do is out of proportion. The solutions they come up with are always extreme. If a child finds one adult that can't be trusted, they often stop trusting all adults. That's radical thinking. So number two, radical. Number three, naivety. Expect them to be naive. They're very young very often, and they can only use the experience they have, which is often very little. So look out for naivety, immediacy, and radical thinking in your parts. And when these things come, you do know that you're being triggered. So, practicing this method means thinking of yourself as a corporate self, including these younger parts, and placing the whole family in a large car. I want you to imagine this now. You're in a large car and your internal family, all your other parts, are in there with you. Now, of course, your parts are always younger than you since they were all formed during your life. So whenever something threatening or traumatic happened, your adult is actually the only part of you that is your age. So they're all younger than you, sometimes very much younger. So the next step in this method is to understand the basics. First and foremost, you should understand your adult as your real-life self. This is associated with the frontal lobes, or your mind, or your consciousness. It's basically the filter through which everything else must pass in order for meaning to be made. Your adult is the sum total of who you are. The other parts do not have all your experience, maturity, knowledge, or the wisdom which your adult has. Now, the more you can think of your younger parts as actual people, slightly separate from yourself, the better this will work. When I work with clients on this, I ask them to find old photographs of themselves as a child or as a baby. Nicknames you had at these ages also help to slightly detach from these parts. Although the ultimate aim is always integration, we have to start by slightly separating yourself from them. Okay, so I've split this into two parts. That is the end of part one, and I'll see you in part two.